The following contains strong language, violence, and nudity. It is intended only for mature audiences. Discretion advised.
Spawn number 28.
Okay. But I thought I could have sworn we recorded this, man. This is when Wanda shows up.
The simple fact is, I don't have, if I had any recordings of Spawn, I would have already started editing those, because just to give folks a little bit of backstory. So what happens is we put out the Spawnometer, the Trencher episode, and that's 27. And then almost immediately you're wanting to go ahead and record on 28 as well. We're setting dates with me, and it's like, well, okay, I mean, it's kind of soon, but that's cool. We'll go ahead and do a recording. I probably won't be able to do the social media, but you know, we'll go ahead and knock you out and we'll have those for the catalog. And then stuff kept happening to where you weren't able to make the date. And
oh, you mean the election? Wasn't it like we were slowly sliding into the election? We were doing the, I think we were going to record one night when they had the first presidential debate.
Might have been, yeah. Yeah, and then some life stuff happened, and then none of us were on the horn with each other for about a month or so there. And so it went from, geez, you're a little bit too soon, to shit, I'm going to have to do a bunch of solo shows because I don't have anything ready or recorded to do continuing on. So I'm trying to like get us a little head on Spawnometer and catch up some of the months we were out. And instead it's like, well, now it's going to be like 5-6 weeks out between those episodes. It's like, fuck. So I think what probably happened is you read the material, you were ready to go because you were, you know, you were wanting to record, and then we didn't actually record. So that's why it's so fresh in your mind.
I don't know, man. I distinctly remember recording this, but okay. I feel we recorded it, but.
Well, let's be honest. It is Spawn Comics. So thinking that you've already read the story 3 or 4 times already would be the norm.
Sure.
Spawn number 28 was by Todd McFarlane and Greg Capullo. Once again, with a thanks to Kevin Conrad. The story is called Protector. It was dedicated to Terry Austin, whom I'm sure you know.
Name sounds familiar.
One of the great inkers of all time. Inked John Byrne's run on X-Men, among other people's runs.
Oh, yeah.
He's the one who gives you that crackling pop look that Arthur Adams had when he was doing the X-Men annuals.
Okay.
Yeah. So the cover is the shot of Spawn curb stopping those old school punks with the messed up I Am the Firestarter Prodigy hair and shit in an alleyway. What did you think of the cover?
It was okay. I mean, it's a Spawn cover. They're getting dark.
Well, it's like darker with the cover. That image is a Tuesday night for Batman, but we don't get to see a lot of actual action shots of Spawn on his covers. He's usually posing, so at least that gives it some distinction. The issue was released on February the 23rd, 1995, just 20 days after number 27, so the Spawn book itself is trying to catch up, and it makes up for the zero number of issues that was shipped in January of that year.
We find Spawn brooding, as always, in his alleyway, in his throne of garbage, and he has Kirsch nailed up to the wall. It was just weird, because usually he destroys his enemies. Like, I mean, Overt Kill has been fucked, I don't know how many times already, and Violators. Kirsch is there cursing him about how he's gonna die, and Spawn is doing what Spawn does best, and brood.
Yeah. One thing I did really like is the first page is a close-up shot of Spawn brooding with his lower lip out. I think Capullo's kind of playing into his selling this in a cartoonish way. I like how it's a 12-panel grid, which is uncommon, and pieces of the grid are being pulled away. So it's like somebody's like tearing Spawn apart piece by piece or something. And then you turn the page and the curse has literally been torn apart into several different pieces.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't he feel like he's now been forsaken? He's not going to go to heaven anymore?
Yeah, I think he talks about how he's made peace with the fact that he's never going to appease his God, and so now he's just all about
retribution and punishing wicked, ain't it?
Seems that way.
Yeah. I mean, cool. I have the old figure. Pretty cool design. Next, we have Wanda, obsessed with Bond, right? Because of Terry, saving Terry, and goddamn, I know I've talked about this before. I just have a distinctive feeling, but she's driving. She knows where Spawn is, reading newspaper clippings that he's in the alleyways of Bond Alley.
The Bowery District. I have to say, too, when I look at that shot of Wanda's face, that does not look like Capullo or McFarlane. That's where I'm like, I can see where the Kevin Conrad's coming in over here.
Oh, really?
Don't you think? That doesn't look like her face normally by either one of those artists, right?
I guess. I mean, I never really thought about it. Now, does it feel like Spawn demasculated Terry?
Hey, how do you mean?
Well, because his wife, like, she's running to Spawn, like, to thank him, but that's, like, really weird. She's leaving her husband at home with the kid.
I don't know that so much emasculation, although you can
weird.
See,
like, what?
You can see that Terry's been broken by his experiences for sure. They have that one shot of him in the bed. I think the reason why she's going to Spawn is not only to thank him, but also because Terry's not talking to her. He's not telling telling her for, you know, what's going on. And I think she's trying to get perspective from Spawn as well.
I guess it just, I don't know. When I was reading this, it was kind of a weird read. I guess I was misreading it. So she's going to his alleyway. And I did like the panel with Spawn screaming at, I'm king here. And he has this big gaping hole in his chest. It just looked cool. I'm not a big fan of the string in the middle of the hamburger face. Still not a big fan of it. You can kind of see his confidence building now. He has a kingdom. He's still brooding, but he's like a brooding king. Very emo. Yeah, that's right, kid. Emo. We used to call it goth back in the day. I'm imagining the Smiths in the background, maybe some Cure. Again, really weird, but Wanda decides to go to the alleyway in the night, in the dark, in a trench coat. I'm just not understanding. She seems somewhat obsessed with Spawn now.
Does Terry know that she's here? I think, isn't she like sneaking out on him? Yeah, that must be what it is, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm telling you, dude. She's just like, I don't know, man. I don't know what I read in this book. I just remember thinking the whole time, like, why are you going? In the nighttime, too. That's very, very side piece action type of thing. Like, it was just really weird. So, and this, okay, and I'm going to bring this up because it does pop up on a few other issues, but the folders that tie up everything. Amazing files on everyone. Burke is here reading about the police chief, and I didn't realize that they hired Kincaid to murder, was it the mayor's son?
Senator's son, if I remember correctly. Maybe, because I thought he was a senator's son. So did the senator's son murder a senator's son?
It seems to me like the chief got him. It sounded like he murdered senator's son, yeah.
Or is involved in the payoff to Billy Kincaid. All I know is they should probably have been talking to the FBI by now instead of just sitting around gloating with the folder.
Yeah, I mean, the fucking folder. They're so weird about this shit.
Yeah, because again, we go back to Terry and he's also all up in that folder.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's all about the fucking folder. Melinda folders have some power in this universe. You pull out the folder and all of a sudden there's all these dark secrets that come spilling out. Trust me, it happens again soon, which blew my fucking mind. I think Todd, when he was writing this, must have seen a vanilla folder sitting on his desk and was like, that's the key. That's the key to my universe. And so, you know, Terry's sitting there with the kid, not wondering where I'm assuming he's wondering where his wife is. Maybe he's a little shocked. Where could she be? Running around at late night in a stormy evening.
Juan is on the down low. He's all up in that dossier. Different strokes, different folks.
Fucking Isley Brothers in the background.
Terry in the sheets, Wanda on the streets.
Yeah, yes. And so Wanda finds him. And of course, she. Okay.
Okay. So, there's actually a bit of dialogue I just caught. So somebody calls and says, hi, Terry. This is Sheila Egger. Is Wanda there? And he's all like, said she was going over to your place. Said there was some new charity you had to discuss. Nope. I haven't talked to her all day. Hope she's all right.
Isley's in the background, man.
I'm hearing it too. We don't have the money for the licensing, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
I want to get to it. Wanda's walking through these alleyways, searching. She's looking for Spawn. Finds a guy who says, I assume I know where he's at. Gives him some cash. He's going to lead her to him. They're walking through the alleyway. And oh God no, or God no, my bad. She's confronted with curse nailed up on the wall. He's playing the victim now. Save me, please. She's running away, freaks out, and gets confronted by some gentleman in the alleyway.
Yeah, they're like 1984 era rapey punk from a Charles Bronson movie.
Well, I was thinking of RoboCop.
Sure, okay, I can see that. Sure.
Yeah, I was ready for Spawn to shoot him in the dick.
Well, what's funny is she appears to have been wandering around these alleys for hours, talking to random homeless dudes, and like they showed them catching sight of her. Immediately. It reminds me of that scene in the Spawn cartoon where the guy's following Angela around and stuff. But these dudes have been tailing her for hours, probably. They're the most patient rapists ever, I would think. This is almost as bad as the first Death Wish, where like the guys follow the mother and daughter from the grocery store all the way back to their apartment before they do their deeds.
I've never seen a movie.
You never saw Death Wish?
Nope.
Wow. And we're the same generation, you know? Yeah. I'm so shocked.
I saw Dirty Harry, but I never saw Death Wish. I've heard about it. I've seen documentaries about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Death Wish is way...
Canon and stuff, but I've never watched the whole movie.
Death Wish is way worse than Dirty Harry in terms of the politics of it. Oh yeah.
I gave you a copy of Death Wish, like this cheap, like drug truck stop version on DVD that I have in my collection that you gave me one day, and I'm like, oh, I'll watch it one day. Just never got to it.
Yeah. Well, the third one's the best because basically it's like Charles Bronson and Ernest Borgnine come up with a solution to the slums is to just kill everybody in the slums, and so they get a Gatling gun and just start mowing down everybody in the area. You know, unless you're one of those bootstrappy kind of people, they would never take welfare. They just blew you away with a Gatling gun.
Is that the one that Bill shows up in?
Who does?
From Bill and Ted. Alex Winter.
Oh, possibly.
One of the punks.
Dude, I haven't seen a Death Wish 3 since like 1987. And I think I saw it on a tiny black and white television set. So I'm not the authority for that. I mean, I know Jeff Goldblum and Lawrence Fishburne were in the first one.
I saw a documentary about Cannon and he was talking about it. And he was talking about how like they got so lazy where they just kind of walked around the neighborhood killing people and like got off on it.
Mm-hmm.
It made like no sense. Just going around killing basically assholes.
Yo, bitch, come here. I want to eat you. Come here. I'm coming for you, bitch. Come here. I want to eat you. Come on.
the rapey guys hear a cat, that damn cat, and all of a sudden a board or a broken 2x4 comes flying and impales itself on one guy's leg. A cinder block crushes a guy's chest. He's dead. The other rapey guy runs, and all of a sudden all you hear is crack, snap, crunch, and who's next? All hell, Bond shows up. The guy that had the 2x4 sticking out his leg is threatening to kill Wanda. Bond does chain thingy, throws him around. You can add anything to this, man.
No, I mean, you're good. I've been talking so much lately on these.
It's pretty just punchy, punchy, kick. You know. Guy threatens to kill Spawn with a gun, stomps on his hand, crushes it.
There's a really curious thing that happens in these issues of Spawn, where they have characters that you know are never going to appear again, given full names. And so they make a point of letting us know that Dougie Mad Dog Gilmore wet his pants over his encounter with Spawn.
Did it? I didn't realize that. Oh, yeah, he does. Wets his pants and doesn't care. Wanda's there, and he doesn't want to kill him in front of Wanda. Never mind the guy who had a cinder block crush his chest is probably wheezing his last breath. His lungs are collapsing. But sure, why not? And of course, Spawn has that goofy, you know, Wanda.
That's not the Wanda I'm used to.
I like that they did a silhouette of a heart in the background of both of them. I thought it was starts asking him, how did you know Terry? Who are you? And of course, he's someone who cares. So let's get all emo and whip out Cure.
I'm just trying to hear that particular line delivery in my head from Keith David.
Asking him who he is. How did he know Terry? How did he save her husband? You know, a lot of questions. She wants to thank him. I don't know. But it's going to explain something in another issue. Because I read these three issues back to back. And I was like, sometimes that's the best way to read McFarlane stuff is all the issues back to back. Because if you put too much of a gap in it,
But yeah, they have the whole thing where she's got the big wide wet eyes, and eventually she does end up crying because she's like super thankful to Spawn, but also she's scared shitless of him, which makes total sense. And then she does the bit where she hands him a picture of her family, so that you did more than save a life.
Again,
you've allowed me to remain a
weird dude.
Yeah, who would give away like a framed photo of their family? You saved my family.
I mean, just lie to your husband, go run around the streets at night to hand him a picture. That's fucking weird. Like, I want to know what was running through Todd's head when he was writing this. Did this seem right to him? It's so fucking weird. And I like weird, but this is like fucking weird. That's a new level me.
The pockets on that trench coat must have been pretty huge for him to get a big framed, glass framed photograph of her family.
Yeah. Never mind, a weapon probably would have been smarter if you're gonna go to a fucking alleyway in the middle of the night with a fucking framed picture, or at least some fucking pepper spray. So Bond looks at the picture. I guess what, to break his heart, because now she has what she's always wanted, a family, which he couldn't give her. Did we talk about that? Did they mention it?
Oh, well, yeah, I think in the earliest issues, yeah. I could never put a baby in her. Yeah, I think they established that early on.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden she's like, I won't come back ever again, and he's like, Wanda! And he goes back to go do some more brooding, but at least we got the clock back.
Mm-hmm.
And a dead body in the alleyway.
We don't know that he's dead, but the bone sticking out of the leg is...
The bone sticking out of his leg. He bled to death.
There does appear to be an awful lot of purplish blood there, so that's not a good sign.
Dude, if he doesn't see a medic soon, gangrene will set in and he will die.
Given the positioning of the body, you would not remain in that position by choice if you had any ability to animate those limbs. So probably he's...
Let me just ask you one question. If you cut your finger, would you lay down in an alleyway full of garbage?
Right. And this is bone sticking out. So yeah.
The dude is dead. It's called murder.
I mean, at least the curse has the cybernetic part. So a lot of the stuff that's jutting, you know, stabbing into him, it's not like essential places and probably robotic parts anyway, where this dude, he's just meat. And I do like the captions at the end. Later, he's been staring at the photo for 3 hours. It'll be another two before he puts it down, because pathos.
Creepy. That's creepy, man. That's
pathos.
Were we going for a creepy vibe at that time? Was he like trying to... Yeah. I don't know, man. This issue was just fucking weird.
I think it was more of an emo thing, but you did mention the spawnometer. It's at 7012. That is where it left off previously, so he did not expend any energy in the meantime.
Well, he didn't fix the hole in his chest, so he still has his gaping hole. Yeah, okay.
So aside from it being weird emotionally, there wasn't a ton going on, but I didn't mind it. I ain't mad at it. It's fine.
Do you think it was a filler?
Clearly, yeah. Well, I mean, I do think that they were trying to give some emotional resonance. The hunt ended on a pretty lame note, and I think that this was sort of a coda to give it a bit more emotional weight, because it just sort of stops with fucking Dossier Town. So at least we're seeing some follow-up to the dossiers. We're trying to give it more emotional context. So I see what he was going for. A stronger writer might have been able to do a better job of that, or incorporate it into the story.
Trying to say he was trying to add dimensions to the character.
I think so.
But all he did is make Wanda seem kind of, I don't know, like shady, and Terry less masculine, and Spawn just more broody.
I give it a C-. I mean, I saw the effort. I'll give him a passing grade. I'm grading it a bit on a curve, but it was fine.
I gave it a D because damn, dog, that was fucking.
I don't want there to be inarguable evidence as to whether or not I'm a sadist. Just want to set something straight. I gave you all these Shadowhawk comic books on like one or two occasions before any of them had been read. And then I got you to read material specifically for our 25th episode with all the little short stories of Shadowhawk. And you specifically say these stories are dark for you. You probably don't want to ever read any more Shadowhawk material, or you're at least not sure if you want to. And I'm like, cool, let's do two miniseries of Shadowhawk. That was not intentional.
And I can tell you, it doesn't get much brighter.
No.
This is not half done. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I did not envision myself. If you would have told me in 1996 that in 2020 I'd be like damn near a Shadowhawk expert, I would have thought of it. Like, this is amazing.
Under what circumstances? We have a show where we talk about image stuff on the internet where it's streaming, and you're like, what?
How many ads run on your Net Zero in 2020? Net Zero was an internet provider, folks, that was free, but they just loaded an ad banner, and you didn't have to pay to use the internet. You want to talk about Shadowhawk 2?
Let me give a brief Shadowhawk timeline, because unfortunately, Shadowhawk has been a casualty of my priorities in talking about the Image Comics universe, and so we're really going way back to the beginning to cover Shadowhawk 2.
Let me just say, as the Shadowhawk expert, how dare you?
Such an essential character in the Image universe, how dare I, Drew? So, Shadowhawk debuted in the July 3rd, 1992 issue of Youngblood, the second issue of the series, in an extra Image short story preview that came out the same month as Spawn number 2, and meanwhile, I think we're on Spawn 29 or 30 related to this episode. The first miniseries began a little over a month later and was released bi-monthly for 3 of the 4 issues, the finale being a month late. The second miniseries arrived 2 months later on May the 8th, 1993. By this point, after Savage Dragon and Wildcats, this is only the third Image launch miniseries to have reached completion, and it was the first to be collected in a trade paperback. Launching the same month as Shadowhawk Series 2 was Bloodstrike, Deathblow, Shaman's Tears, Tribe, and Trencher, which we'll get back to later on. The cost of the first issue was $3.50 due to it having a die-cut foil-enhanced cover. Adjusted for inflation would cost $6.30 today. The embossed foil-enhanced trade paperback cost $19.95, which would be $35.93 and $20 for a 4-issue miniseries and a handful of short stories. By comparison, the 10-issue World Without a Superman trade was only $7.50 a few months later, while the Savage Dragon trade paperback was only $9.95 and it had 8 less pages, but none of the bells and whistles, the gimmick. So Shadowhawk 2, number 2, came out a couple months later, charging $1.95 for a foil embossed cover, and then number 3 came a month later than that with a perforated trifold cover of Shadowhawk removing his mask plus some extra pages for $2.95. So lots of gimmicks on Shadowhawk, because I think Jim Valentino realized that the gimmicks help make up for his not being as hot as some of the other artists. But boy, he really liked throwing that shit at you for issue after issue, it seemed like.
Right. Hey, look, it was the 90s. Just gimmick the shit out of it. It's fine. I'm not going to blame him for that. Although those adjusted for inflation prices were staggering. Like, that's outrageous, dude.
Well, I mean, a standard issue comic today costs, I think, $3.95. So, you know, that's an extra couple of bucks or so for the enhancement. It doesn't really seem to be that bad relative to how overpriced comic books are today.
What the fuck is what you're just saying, that it's like $35?
Oh, yeah. No, that's nuts. That's nuts. Like, today, that trade would be $20, you know, or less.
His issues start out with Shadowhawk talking to himself as he does. It's still hard to follow sometimes.
I've got to find this creep. Been gone for only 6 weeks. Just long enough for the wounds to heal from my fight with the dragon. And some punk kid has usurped my turf. I'm called Shadowhawk. He calls himself Hawk Shadow. As if that's some kind of homage. The media refers to him as a copycat. I do not agree with this point of view. The fact of the matter is, he does something I'd never do. He kills. He murders people. And in my book, that makes him just as bad as them. Maybe worse. He's using my name.
But he's basically mentioning that there's a copycat Shadowhawk called the Hawk's Shadow. Now, to remind the listeners here, Shadowhawk does not kill. Shadowhawk's whole thing is he breaks people's spinal columns. And that's his signature. His signature is breaks their spinal columns so that they do not die, but that they are paralyzed for the rest of their lives and suffer for causing other people's suffering. And a great reminder of that is this first little trek he's on. There's some no good stuff happening in an alley. Some dude's threatening some woman. He jumps down, uppercuts one one dude, blood everywhere. And then the other guy, he pulls him off panel. And this is all you see, is you see the look on the woman's face that he was quote unquote saving. He's like,
"Are you all right, ma'am?
Don't touch me!
It's not you I want."
The criminal's like, "No, stay away from me." And then it just says, "The monk, ugh, that, wump, whack, crack." And then the woman like recoils and she's holding her mouth and she's saying,
"Oh dear God, I'm going to be sick."
This is a 12 panel page and the perp is only in the first 5-ish panels and the rest of it is just her reacting to what kind of fucked up shit Shadowhawk doing. Very spawny kind of action over here.
It's just outrageous that like this dude was going to slit her throat, was holding her hostage, right, basically, and she's like gonna puke because he hurt these dudes so bad in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
It just really set the tone. It really puts me back in my Shadowhawk reading mentality, which is, good Lord, when is this gonna stop? This is so horribly depressing.
You've got the stuff too, like where he's slashing at a dude and Valentino gives you that extra step of having the guy's like tongue hanging out his mouth while that's happening. It's like he really humiliates these dudes through the artwork. The victim in this instance, she's surrounded by what appear to be white dudes. One guy's kind of yellow skinned, so I'm going to try not to make assumptions of what's being communicated there. But the woman herself, she's not some buxom blonde or something else. She's a regular looking woman, African American, short hair, big hoop earrings. There's no here, and the fact that you were seeing a black woman being victimized by mostly white males, I had some issues with some of the racial stuff going on in the first miniseries, and it's almost like immediately Valentino's addressing that. I have to give him kudos.
Next morning, City Hall.
"You know I'd like to help, Paul, but I just don't see how I can. Most of us really do feel sorry for you, but you burned a lot of bridges with..." "Excuse me, honey. Hello? Yes, this is she. Uh-huh. Yes, excuse me for one second, will you? Was there anything else, sugar? If not, this is kind of important. Would you mind?"
"No, not at all. Say hi to Jerry for me."
"Sure thing. You take care now."
From there, we go to, frankly, a section of the story that I'm just not really interested in. I don't understand where it's going. It's like a group, some team members called the Regulators or something like that. And I guess they're trying to recruit Shadowhawk, but some other people don't like Shadowhawk.
Midtown. That night.
"If and I do join your little group, Vendetta, I wants to make one thing clear. I'm not into playing supervillain. I don't care about conquering the city, the world, or dancing with superheroes."
"I assure you, Hard-Edged, neither are we. Would you care to expound on that for our new friend, Blackjack?"
"Sure thing, Vendetta. It's just this simple, pal. We Regulators are only interested in the improvement of our personal financial resources."
"Or simply put, we're crooks."
"Yeah, and I pity the fool who gets in our way."
"You pity? You've been watching A-Team reruns again, haven't you, Arson?"
"Be quiet, Vortex. You too, Arson. Blackjack, do we have any more information about Shadowhawk?"
"Yeah, he just resurfaced last night after a few weeks of laying low."
"Really? And what about the copycat? The one that kills?"
"Hawk Shadow? We haven't found him yet, but we know he's out there."
Anyway, yada yada. Let's just yada 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 that. So from there, we get into the head of the, the Hawk's Shadow. I'm going to screw that up a million times. So the Hawk's Shadow, you're in his thinking to himself, and he's looking down outside of, it's like a church, because you see it says Jesus Saves. There's some people talking. It just seems like normal shit going on. And in this guy's mind, he's just absolutely raging. This blonde woman that's down there is surrounded by all these African Americans, and he's just like losing it.
"No, this cannot be. I simply will not allow it. Not in my city. Not anymore. Stand back, fair lady, and fear thee not. Never will you suffer the indignity of this animal's touch again."
They move in for a kiss, and he's like, "That woman's being attacked." And he jumps off the building and just slashes this dude open and then starts smashing his face into the ground. And then she's like,
"No, wait! You don't understand! He's my husband!"
"That really is too bad, my dear. For you!"
"Oh my God! Help!"
And then he starts coming after her. We cut back to these Regulators. They're robbing a jewelry store. Shadowhawk jumps in and starts whipping their ass.
"Why are they robbing a jewelry store? And why should I care? I'm not a superhero. I stop violent crime. I'm not into common robbery.
Yeah, right. Like if I had a choice. I made my choice the day I put this costume on.
Well, 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 Vortex. Look at who's come out to play.
Arson, you of all people should know that I never play.
Yarr! What is that stuff? It's burning me!
I thought it might. That is why I packed it. It's baking soda.
Throws baking soda? There's a dude named Arson or something, and he throws baking soda on him, and apparently he's just like, oh, what? I'm burning! All this stuff. And then one of the women, Vortex, she's like,
aw, now, you wouldn't hit a lady, would you?
I don't know. If you ever meet one, introduce me.
And I'm like, fucking got her, dude. Fucking, like, I mean, what are you gonna do now? Break her back? She's already destroyed and shattered after that sick burn. Good lord.
Your wonders never cease. Looks like our favorite mystery man has developed a sense of humor.
So then some dudes step in and save that Vortex or whatever, and then they fly off. I mean, that's all it is. This is
well, the whole thing is they were trying to attract Shadowhawk's attention through the break-in because they keep wanting to recruit him to their team of villains or anti-hero type peoples, even though there's no reason to think that he would actually want to work with them again. I think he worked with them briefly in the previous miniseries to go after the alien dudes or something, but there's no reason. I don't know why they would need him. He doesn't have any real powers or anything. It's a story point, so.
Fucking yawn. Let's keep moving on. They cut to a balcony. And what's this girl's name again? This is like one of his regular recurring characters, right?
Mm-hmm. Christina.
Christina, yeah. So she's sitting on fire escape and she's listening to TV.
The entire city was shaken tonight. As is the rest of them.
I want to hear this.
By the brutal slaying of civil rights and church leader, the Right Reverend Martin L. Wright. The Reverend was slain with four other men and his pregnant wife, Melissa. Shown here, directly in front of their church, after leading a prayer against school violence. Witnesses have identified the assailant as the vigilante copycat, Hawk's Shadow.
Oh my God.
The murderer was overheard uttering racist epithets, thereby giving credence to this reporter's theories.
And it's just like, here we go, dude.
Right,
like,
Shadowhawk, Shadowhawking, yeah.
Shadowhawking our fucking dicks off again. Like, he couldn't just be the guy died. It was everybody around him and his wife. Oh, and the wife was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Lord, what is going on, dude? Like, this is like, it's like torture porn, dude. This is like outrageous. Everything has got to be as bad as it gets.
If I remember correctly, Christina was one of the suspects that they'd set up in the first miniseries to potentially be Shadowhawk. I think she was a cop who was, like, maybe drummed out of the force because of excessive violence or something. I'm not sure if she had lost her job or not, but that's my very vague recollection of where she's coming at this from.
No, they explain later on why she's a suspect.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll continue.
You okay?
No. How can I be okay, Christina? There's a guy out there that I might have inspired, killing black men.
And the women that love them.
It's not funny, Christina.
No. No, it's not. You try to make a difference.
But it doesn't really matter. We're never gonna win. The bad guys will. They always do.
Horse feathers! Sure, it's not gonna be easy. Nothing ever is. But someone's gotta make a dent in it.
So from there, we go back to, who are these dudes again? The regulators. And they're talking about that jewelry store they stole that stuff from. They stole it because they had told the jewelry store owner he needed to use them for protection and he refused. So they robbed him, make him think he, you know, and it's just like, what? Who cares? That's not what we're looking for here. From there, we have a big splash page of Shadowhawk diving down from a building. And it says, the killer stalks streets in my name. It is therefore up to me to bring him to justice. Next issue. I thought this was a pretty good, the first page, it's sort of this like negative. I've seen this before. Is this a Jim Lee thing or is this a Todd McFarlane thing? The rain, it's like the whole page is black and the rain is in white. Or is it a Frank Miller Sin City thing maybe? I don't know.
Probably he's the one who most recently popularized that, but using, you know, doing a black page and then throwing white out on it to make it rain is an old technique. So
yeah, I'm sure you read a lot of Batman. So he's basically, I hate the rain. I've always hated the rain and I always will. And I think that this like vertical splash page is pretty good with this absurd amount of rain just pouring on him with him propped up. Like when Valentino really takes his time with a page, it's good. You know what I mean? It's just his normal action panels that are kind of dull. But I thought this splash page was really good. Then we cut to two cops. One is named Frakes and the other one's Jax. Like I feel like this is when somebody's sitting in a room and they're trying to make a name up and they're just looking around the room for something to, and they're, I'm Frakes. You know, I'm like, what the hell calls him? Anyway.
Frakes, are you out of your ever loving mind?
What's that? Oh no, son, it's just Jax. Yeah, I will. You too, Pete. Bye.
Word is that you're looking to take out a contract on Shadowhawk.
Word's good. So what is it to you anyway?
Look, we may have had our differences in the past, but you're a good cop and I respect that. But something like this, well, if Internal gets wind of it, it would cost you your whole career.
It's worth it.
Oh, come on, man. Nothing's worth that.
Maybe not to you, but from where I'm sitting, I've got two nutcases out there now. One of them breaks people's spines for kicks, the other murders black males. Both are dangerous in the extreme and have to be taken down, no matter what the cost. Now, the only real question is, are you with me?
Does this mean I'm no longer a suspect?
Yeah, I guess it does.
Okay. What do you need?
I need a hotshot. I need someone who can move in and out. Clean, low-key. I've got someone in mind. Heard you did a tour with him. Can you put me in touch with Chapel?
Maybe. I'll make a few calls. See what happens.
Both talking about how Shadowhawk's bad dude, Hawk Shadow, bad dude. What am I going to do about it? And I guess this guy, Jax, has a link to Youngblood, or he knows...
I remember correctly, he served with Chapel. And so Chapel specifically is his in.
Okay, so he's basically like, I need you to get me Chapel. We're going to hire Chapel to take these dudes out. And he's like, oh, make some calls.
It just so happens that Frakes has a black and white photograph of Chapel handy. There's a competition about who is the best artist on Chapel. Jim Valentino is not in that competition.
Yeah, it's going to be a no for me, dog. Yeah, look, it's fine, dude. Okay, there were some heavy hitters with Image. I think some of it is, you know, I think if this were at Marvel or DC, this would have been fine. Come on, if this was a Batman book, this wouldn't be like the worst thing in the world, right?
No.
Okay,
it's just that when you're competing with like Rob Liefeld and Jay Lee, and then all of a sudden you've got pedestrian ass Jim Valentino drawing Chapel, it's like, not so much. Although I will say, I'm not a huge fan of Greg Capullo's Chapel, so maybe he is in the running a little bit.
Fair enough. Okay, from there we go back to the regular dudes. Nobody cares.
And on the other side of town.
There's a Caucasoid fellow suiting up.
I'm leaving, Ma.
What?
I'm going out.
Don't forget your coat, dear.
I won't.
It's pouring out there. You'll catch your death.
Yes, Ma.
And phone if you're gonna be late.
I will, Ma.
Are you sure you gotta go out on a night like this?
Yeah, Ma. I do. I gotta carry on for Pa, Ma. I gotta carry on the Lord's work, just like you taught me. I gotta carry out his plan, even on a night like this.
The Hawk Shadow is a Caucasoid. So he's getting ready to go out, and he's like giving his mom a hug and kiss, and on the wall behind them... And I say this, it's not just, there's no way I can say this without saying the word fucking, folks. There's a fucking picture of the KKK. Like, dragons having a meeting up just on the wall.
With torches. Oh, shit, and there's feet. Look, there's feet from lynchings. Holy shit. This is fucked. A framed picture on the wall.
Of course it is, dude. This is Shadowhawk. It could just be a picture of a fucking grand dragon. It's gotta be a fucking still of a lynching.
Mm.
Holy fuck. Okay, so he's basically kissing his mom on the cheek. I just gotta read all this. I don't give a shit. I gotta carry out his plan, even on a night like this. And then we come back to Shadowhawk, and he's like,
I'm no detective. I don't even like mystery novels. Far be it for me to figure out a clue. But she knows these things. Lord knows she was the top of her class. And by the way she figures it, he's gonna be in this neighborhood tonight. Although, God knows, this certainly is a big neighborhood. He could be anywhere.
So then they cut back to Night Shadow, and he goes,
ah, that's better. I always feel better when I put on my uniform. It makes me feel like I've got power. The power to set things right.
That's all inside his head. And then he screams, the power to take this city back.
And they're all the passersby are like, what the fuck happened to you with that? Where did that come from?
The power to take this city back. It looks as though God is on my side.
He spots some black males.
Just look at them laughing, carrying on, listening to that rap music. They must be gangbangers. Why else would they be out on a night like this, wearing their baggy clothes?
Damn.
End of the line, suckers!
Hey, yo, man, don't you be getting in my face.
You don't do nothing, Docky. Except, of course, get yourself into trouble in spades. Ha, I made a funny.
quote unquote darkie, folks. Folks, it says dark, all right? I'm not happy about it. I'm not proud to say it. I'm just reading the text off. Then it kicks the guy in the stomach. Except, of course, get yourself into trouble in spades. And then he says, ha, I made a funny, as he's just annihilating these dudes.
Evoking ebonic phrasing. And then he quotes Splinter from the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies. What?
Splinter dropped darkie in the Teenage Ninja Turtles movies? I made a funny. Oh, that's what it was.
They make a point of one little bit of dialogue where they actually put a red circle around it, dot, 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 in spades. It's like, oh man, you're leaning hard into this.
Okay, anyway, so then Shadowhawk is running around the neighborhood.
But you do know that's an ethnic slur, right?
Yes, I know. I was like, look, man, this is why I can't ever run public offices at these podcasts. So we're reading this shit. We're not saying it, dude. We're just reading it. Shadowhawk stops in and says,
there's so much noise in the city. So many sounds to try and sift through. No one could pick out just one. Unless he was enhanced in some way. I just got to hunt. And hope that I'm... Hello. That's him. It's got to be him. That's him. That dirty, no-good son of a...
Stop! What? Who? You? You're... Shadowhawk! And you? You're the murderer who's appropriated my name! Yes, I call myself Hawk Shadow, and I've taken on your sacred mission to rid our streets of vermin and all!
No! Our missions are not the same. I don't kill! That's a line I never cross!
You're insane! We're exactly alike, you and me. I'm only doing what you do. I'm only killing niggas.
And folks, he drops the N-word. Mm-hmm. 100% drops the N-word. In which case, it was like an Endgame. When the Ancient One hits the Hulk and fucking Bruce Banner falls out, that was me. When I read that word, it was like I astral-planed out of my own body and fell out of my chair onto the floor behind my office chair. Like, as far as this book had already gone, I didn't think he was actually going to drop the N-word in it. Oh, but he did.
If you're going to do it, this was an interesting way to do it. Basically, like, multiple tiers on this page. And, like, the top half of it are two horizontal actions. Beat, and then the bottom two are somewhat positioned the same way, but most of the bottom row is broken up into four panels, and there's a single panel on the row above it. All the rest of that space that would have been taken up by three panels is just blackness, darkness forever, and then in white lettering, the word. Unless they gave it its own logo, I think that's probably the strongest way you could have conveyed how messed up that was. You gave them the react they were looking for, I suspect.
Yeah, so then it goes to Shadowhawk saying, what, you ignorant racist fool, as he's taking his helmet and mask off. And then we get to these gatefold pages that, like, I like had to turn the book like four or five times to figure out which way they're supposed to go.
Well, and it's funny too, because you know, it's a fold in. So since it's a big reveal, you have to actually like unfold the poster, the little mini poster, to see what's being revealed.
Yeah. And then he says,
what?
You ignorant, racist fool.
You mean like me? You rotten son of a... I've been fighting scum like you all of my life! All of my life!
Wrong, Darkie! We've been fighting you! Fighting to keep our country from becoming a third world nation!
Your country? Your country? Your country? This is my country too!
Stop it, Paul! Before you kill him!
I want to kill him. It's all he deserves.
Maybe so, but his death won't change anything.
It'll make me feel better.
Is that what our mission has become? Personal vengeance? Come on, Paul, let's get into the truck and go. This was supposed to be about making a difference. If you kill him in cold blood, then you're no different than he is. Just one more murderer. Come on, Paulie. Don't give in now.
All right, Christina.
There's my good soldier.
How's girl?
Not good. They don't think he's gonna make it. He just can't seem to heal.
This book has got me what they call shook, folks. And so, yeah, it was a little, I lost my train of thought. Yeah, so anyway, the splash page reveal was, he says, like, me! It's because he's pulled his helmet off and revealed that he is himself an African-American male. And they are very much not the same. So then he starts beating him down. And that's when, what's her name? God, I keep forgetting this woman's name. I'm so terrible with the names in this book. Christina. Christina stops him. He's like, Paul, Shadowhawk's name. Paul, stop before you kill him. And he's like, I want to kill him. Like, this is the first exception to his rule, right? So anyway, he and him, he's just leaving him, like, leading in the streets. The cops find him, and they're like, oh, dude, this is freaking Night's Watch or Night's Shadow. So they arrest him. Cut to...
It's Hawk's Shadow, by the way.
Hawk's Shadow. I knew. Oh, God. Night's Shadow, Nightshade, Hawk's Shadow.
I just love the one cop comes out of the in the rain, and he's like, Mother of Pearl! We're dropping in bombs. We're calling people darky. And then all of a sudden, this cop's like, oh, my stars and garters. You're like, what? Wait, what?
Great teaser. Close.
See if he's alive.
Yeah, we got a pulse. Better call in for an ambulance.
Will do. Yes, that's correct. No, no, sir. It does not look as though his back is broken.
Some dude's got his feet propped up and he's watching the TV reports. Is this Frank's? Or,
no, this is Jax, who's the Jax. Ginger kind of guest. Yeah.
No. The African-American fellow on TV.
Frank's is the black dude.
Yeah, it's Frank's. Captain Frank, do you have any comments? Only one, Jamie. I'd like to send a message to Shadowhawk. You're next.
And it's like, you didn't catch that. You didn't catch Hawk Shadow. You didn't do this. He left that for you.
And so, the city can breathe a little easier this soggy night as the police have arrested the serial killer called Hawk's Shadow. Captain Frakes, do you have any comments?
Only one, Jamie. I'd like to send a message to Shadowhawk. You're next!
Give him hell, Frakes.
This is Jax.
Lieutenant Jax, at Youngblood HQ, returning your call.
Please scramble.
Lou, listen up, pal. No can do on this end. We're up to our necks in it. I am gonna recommend someone to you. Guy's name is Slaughter.
Never heard of him.
There's a reason for that. Trust me.
The guy's name is Slaughter. And it's like, never heard of him. It's like, there's a reason for that. Trust me. It's like, okay. I don't know. Is that a compliment or not a compliment? There's a reason.
Because I'm way out of your league, for starters. You know, it's like, oh, we went on that one mission together, dude. Lose my number, but I'll get you caught up with Slaughter, at least. And
well, I mean, it's like, they haven't heard from him. It's not because he's so good or because he's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why have I never... okay, so next issue. I mean, this it's another kid running because he did something bad. And fucking Shadowhawk breaks the dude's back. Of course he does. Every issue has to start this way.
Stupid. Really stupid, Joey. You killed her. Stupid witch. She shouldn't have screamed like that. She just shouldn't have. Now the cops are coming. And if they catch me, I'm doing a hard time for sure. Maybe if I climb. Maybe then I can escape. Maybe. Sure, all I've got to do is get to the top. Then I can get away. If I can just get high enough, I know I can make it. I just know. Who could find me up here? I'll just hide in the dark. Sure, there you go. Now you're thinking, Joey. I'll be safe in the dark. Safe from every one.
Before we dive into the issue two, there is a letter section in issue number two.
Oh. Okay.
And it offers an extremely brief profile of Brad W. Foster. Our new background artist, Brad, is also one of the most respected artist publishers in the small press movement. Brad has published a slew of black and white comics, posters, cards, and prints under the Jabberwocky graphic banner since 1975. In fact, catalog of his fine publications can be had by sending a dollar to P.O. Box 165246, Irving, Texas, 75016. Brad lived deep in the heart of Texas with his lovely wife, Cindy, and does not like to have his picture taken. We like him anyway. So if you're noticing that there's some fairly ornate buildings throughout this miniseries and also some photography, I believe that's all him. I mentioned it because I interviewed him. I don't know where I don't know if it was going to be able to fit in here or not, but I actually got to talk to him at a con a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. And in fact, I bought some of his comics.
I thought you were going to reveal to us that you're him. issue starts out.
But since we are in the final chapter two, I will mention that Valentino's swinging for the fences with his dedications. The first part of Shadowhawk 2 was dedicated to Wally Wood, the second part to Will Eisner, and the third to Stan Lee. So he's basically using this as his Mount Rushmore.
I thought he had a Giffen thank you in here too. No?
There is a thank you, but it's a little bit different on that one.
Okay, special thanks to Keith Giffen and Daniel Dunn at the end of issue two.
Because I think that they help him to conceive of Slaughter. Okay, I think that they, instead of having Chapel, they helped him create this stand-up.
Okay, and then you mentioned Home Dude worked for Jabberwock Press or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you noticed that on the second paneling by Jabberwock Press. Did you mention that and I just spaced out? Or
No, that did come up. So yeah, and you caught it pretty quickly because that is not a common word.
Okay, it was one of my favorite books.
Uh-huh.
So when you said it, it stood out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. So issue three starts like every other Shadowhawk book. So now we're up on the rooftop. It's Frax and Slaughter and a cop that looks like he's like puking in the background. And the exchange goes like this.
Is he alive?
Oh yeah, he never kills them. He just breaks their spinal column.
Nice.
In the images of Shadowhawk, Trencher also compliments Shadowhawk form as has Slaughter did in the miniseries. So maybe that's part of the Keith Giffen impact. Why does Slaughter have all of these no smoking signs all over his body?
They're not no smoking, dude. It says hope. It's no hope. But yeah, I get it. It's circled with the
Do you want to describe this guy?
Good Lord, man.
He's like the 90s, but also the 70s. Because he's got these oversized mirror sunglasses and he's got a Dr. Red Duke mustache. Bush coming out of this guy's nostrils. Very hairy too, you know, really hairy arms. And then the rest of him is like pure 90s, giant guns, straps everywhere, knives, all that kind of bullshit.
He looks like some knockoff G.I. Joe character.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. One of the, not even G.I. Joe, but that interim line they came out with where they were trying to do G.I. Joe Extreme.
Yeah. That's what I'm like, for sure. Basically, the whole issue is he's trying to figure out Slaughter is like, okay, so.
How do you know it's him?
Same M.O. He usually snaps the vertebrae in the lower back.
Usually?
Look, John, we've been dealing with this SOB for going on 2 years now. We can tell. You'll find knuckle-sized indentations caused by those ball-bearing type brass knuckles he wears. Plus, there are other telltale signs.
I just want to be sure this isn't some kind of copycat.
Nope, it's him. Trust me.
All right. Two things then, off the top. One, this guy's strong, lots of upper body development. Two, he understands anatomy, what to hit, where, and how.
Martial arts training?
Probably.
I figure he's a badge.
Could be. But if he is, he's got pre-med training. Maybe more. And he's carrying a grudge. Database, got anything on anyone fitting that description?
Roger Wilco, boss.
Still serving or discharged?
Discharged. Much better motive.
Okay, got one. Name's Reed. Christina Reed.
A woman? Okay, let's go get her.
Do you really think that Shadowhawk's a woman?
Could be. There's certainly circumstantial evidence to suggest it.
I don't know. I've been up close. Heard him speak.
Bleep, bloop, blurp. We found someone. Christina Reed.
Like, Frakes is on the rooftop. Frakes is the one who's hiring Slaughter. Frakes is a heavyset black man who is, I think, the police chief for this particular precinct. And they established that Shadowhawk has been active for the past 2 years. So we've got a timeline on this guy. And so in that regard, he predates many of the Image Comics characters that are currently active because he's been around for 2 years. Certainly Spawn. I think Savage Dragon might have gone back further too. So I'd have to look at the timeline to see how early Shadowhawk is relative to the other Image characters because of their own post-dated history.
Shadowhawk is sleeping, except he's restless. He talks about how tired he is. He hasn't slept well since Hojo died. Who's Hojo? Did I read that?
Hojo is his brother. In the first miniseries, he made a point of putting out a few different people that could potentially be Shadowhawk, and then none of those people, for the most part, shows up in the second miniseries, and we don't even see Paul Johnstone, except for like one page that kind of got skipped while we were going over the book. And so it's not like a huge reveal since they haven't even shown any of these characters in this miniseries, but the previous miniseries ended with John Stone's brother, who was a junkie, dying. And he's living in relative squalor too. I mean, he's got a mattress on the floor. He's in a dingy apartment. It's not well kept. There's like old pizza lying around and stuff. And he's got a medicine cabinet full of pills.
Yeah, and he's talking about how he's hoping that Christina's looking for a job. It just seems like they're not in good shape, right? But they're like making do. So from there, we cut to Slaughter showing up to Christina's building, and a woman stops him and goes,
"Excuse me, young man.
Yeah.
This is a non-smoking building. It was clearly marked in the lobby. Didn't you see the sign?
No, I must have missed it.
Yes, well, would you mind putting that disgusting thing out?
You mean this?
Yes, I do.
No. I got no problem with that at all.
Like puts it out on her face or on her teeth.
I think in her mouth. He puts it in her mouth.
Yeah, toss it in her mouth. And she's like, yeah, and runs off. Let me tell you something. This Slaughter fellow, not that nice a guy.
The definition of uncouth.
Yeah, he knocks at the door.
Go away.
Christina Reed.
What's it to you? What do you want?
And he just kicks the door in and starts shooting at her, dude.
Avon calling.
I like how his Arnold Schwarzenegger deadpan gag is Avon calling.
Yeah, Avon calling. Yeah, of course.
Freeze!
Freeze this, jerk!
Even though I like snappy repartee as much as the next psychopath, my client, the beautiful city of New York, has hired me not to talk, but to bring you in.
Bastard!
And I, pro that I am, intend to deliver. That was your kneecap. Never fails to make me want to smoke. Would you care to join me, Shadowhawk?
They have like a brief exchange, and then he shoots her in both of her kneecaps, and one of them, like her bone, is sticking out.
Right.
Like, dude, of course, because it's Shadowhawk.
Right.
And the next thing you know, there's phone ring, and Shadowhawk answers. He's like,
what? Where are you? Oh my god. They think what? Sit tight. Yeah. Bye. Damn.
He decides to go make himself appear to the police so they can be like, oh, wait, this chick can't be Shadowhawk because he's on the building across from our headquarters.
Hey, look up there. It's Shadowhawk.
They start shooting at him. He's like, all right, cool. I got their attention. Now that they know that she's not Shadowhawk, he starts to go off and then.
Yo, Birdman, freeze or I'll blow your face off.
Get real.
Not bad. Not bad at all. I haven't had a good scrape in weeks, and buddy, it looks like you're it!
What? Are you crazy?
Nope, I'm Slaughter, Jonathan Peake.
Why are you doing this? I don't even know you, do I?
Nope.
You're not another one of those super cops like the Dragon, are you?
No, I'm a bounty hunter. And guess who's the bounty?
Fletcher Christian.
You're a cool one, I'll give you that. But if you so much as twitch...
What will you do, bounty hunter?
I'll splatter your brains from here to Fifth Avenue. One question, son. Why do you do it?
Justice.
Not a lot of that going around these days, that's for sure. Why not just kill him? Blam. You're in, you're out, it's over and done.
It's too easy. My way, they suffer.
Sadistic little SOB, ain't you?
No. They hurt others, I hurt them. I only go after the violent ones. I catch them in the act.
And then you sentence them?
Yes.
Scales are balanced?
More or less.
Justice is served?
I think so.
Anyone ever tell you you were psycho?
One.
I see. Okay, I like it. Hit the road, Jack. You're free to go.
Thanks, bounty hunter. I'll remember this.
Yeah, sure.
Boss, now how am I going to explain this blemish on an otherwise perfect record?
I don't really care, cover-up. It's your job to figure it out.
Oh, sure, right. Easy for you to say. You had them in your sights, dead to rights, and you let him go. Why? Because you thought he had a reasonable solution to the crime problem. He cripples people.
And I kill him. You don't seem to have a problem with that.
That's different. It's clean. It's easy, but this guy?
Maybe he's wrong. Maybe there is hope after all. Christina's going to be all right. And Carlton is in remission. And in spite of himself, Slaughter has given me renewed faith that what I'm doing is right. But then again, he kills people for a living. And as for me, the fight continues. Even though I'm so very tired, a tired that no amount of rest will relieve, a tired that runs so deep it goes down to my very soul.
you know, he's trying to take the advice with a grain of salt. And that's the end of the issue.
The beacon of hope is that the dude who fucking kneecapped a chick for no good reason and is just an absolute public menace is like, you're all right with me, buddy. Definitely a questionable source of affirmation in your mission.
I guess if like you're sleeping on a mattress on the floor and popping pills all the time, if you're trying to find some way to rationalize that you're doing the right thing, I guess you're going to find it.
He hasn't been sleeping a lot lately. We didn't establish that. And then there's a blurb at the end. Next month, images of Shadowhawk abused with dialogue by Alan Grant, everything else by Keith Giffen. Let's face it, these guys brought you Lolo. They're definitely going over the top with the Hawk. Then Jim and Chance and company return in November with Shadowhawk 3, a 4-issue series that will reveal his secret origin. And if you think you've seen every possible origin story already, think again.
I think I'm going to say the same thing I said before about the Shadowhawk stuff. It's not that bad. A lot of the other Image stuff, it felt like they were just trying to do way too much, where there's has the freaking clandestine teams, and there's like a million fucking characters in every issue, and you're just trying to keep all these different people straight, and like, oh, well, this is the clandestine team, and this is the famous team, and these bad guys, and these good guys, and these guys are normal people that are just disguised bad guys. You can't keep anybody straight. The storytelling in Shadowhawk is far more linear. It doesn't try and get cute. They're quick reads. They're not amazing to look at, but it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not like it, Chris Claremont wrote it, right? And I'm reading a novel's worth of dialogue in one single issue. He wrapped up the Nightshirt. What's he doing?
Did you just call him Nightshirt?
No, I don't know. The Hawk Shadow. Previewed the Hawk Shadow. He wrapped the Hawk Shadow thing up. And as he was wrapping that up, they were introducing Slaughter. And then Slaughter's the protagonist in the next issue. Old school storytelling. Except it's just like absurdly, brutally violent. And really like unnecessarily violent.
Mm.
And not even thoughtfully violent. It's like gratuitous. It gets a little bit on your nerves. But look, I thought the Hawk Shadow issue was pretty good. Other than the language being used. But it was done to establish the fact that this dude has pictures of lynchings on his wall up at home. I mean, really in your face, but at least it wasn't like all three issues was dedicated to the Hawk Shadow, right? Like, they didn't drag it out.
Well, and that was actually one of my problems, is like, okay, this is supposed to be a complete story, and then the story that you set up in the first issue is resolved in the second issue, and then the third issue, you got this random deal with Slaughter. Probably should have gone at least another issue. And what bugs me is that the first miniseries sets up the mystery of who is Shadowhawk. We've given you all the clues. Can you figure it out? And then they just sort of like go, well, just whip that mask off. We're not going to do this anymore. I feel like they should have maybe done the reveal at the end of the three issues, and the Hawk Shadow story should have continued through that as well. The whole Slaughter thing was just like, where the fuck did this come from? I agree with you that the storytelling is more competent, frankly, and you know, Jim Valentino has written more comics than any of the other guys. It shows, but also it's almost like he lost interest in the premise that he'd started out with and just sort of gone off in another direction midway through the miniseries.
Like, you should read it issues 1, 3, 2, not 1, 2, 3, right? Like,
yeah, like maybe they like do the Slaughter thing in the middle and then resolve at the end. Yeah.
So here's my perspective on it. I didn't realize it was only three issues because right. The trade is so thick. So I thought there was like going to be another issue, and then I was like, oh, that's it. So I guess, yeah, looking at it that way, that is, then it doesn't make sense that they were ending the 3-issue miniseries on the Slaughter issue. Doesn't make any sense. But it was what, another 7 minutes of reading? Like, I mean, it's not like,
yeah,
oh, you drug this all out for this Slaughter storyline. No, not really.
I didn't hate it or anything. It just, if you're going to have it be a miniseries, then you should probably have an arc over the course of the miniseries rather than a two-parter followed by a third one. Yeah. And I think the reason why the trade was so thick was because if you flip it to the other side, you've got essentially like a Ohotmu or a Who's Who for the Shadowhawk universe of a whopping 7 total issues.
Yeah, and I think were the letters paid back? I had briefly flipped it.
Mm-hmm. The other thing about the gratuitous violence is that you may not be able to afford the cover enhancements, although in this case they can. You may not be able to afford like flashy artwork, but the gore doesn't cost you anything. So, and being willing to go to places the other creators won't go is a device in and of itself. It's like, I'll go there, and the people who want that more extreme content will gravitate toward me. I get why he goes for that little extra version of violence. I mean, that's part of what you're here for, is to see something you can't see in a movie that you wouldn't necessarily see in any of the other comic book. He went there with it, and I respect that.
Yeah, and so, like, look, I've now read quite a bit of Shadowhawk. I'll go to Shadowhawk 3. Let's do it, dude. Did it ever come out? When does the shit stop?
There is a Shadowhawk 3. It's true. That's going to be the origin, I believe.
Okay, let's send it. You know what? Let's just do this. Because look, it's just not so bad that I can't keep reading it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I always tell people, it's easier for me to like a bad movie if it's not long.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If it's like an hour and 25 minutes, dude, I'll watch an hour and 20 minute long bad movie all day. It's your 3-hour bad movies, mm-hmm. your 2 hours and, you know, 45 minute bad movies. Those are the ones where you want to just, you know, jump out of a window or something.
And again, it flows. I mean, you didn't like the Regulator material, but that'd be a few pages and then we're on to the next thing. They didn't dwell on it too much. much. I didn't mind the regular Ritter stuff as much as you did, but this does not fit the tone of the rest of the series. These guys are too gaudy and fantastic, and they don't really contribute much to the story that's being told in this particular volume. It's brief, they're out of the way, and then we go back to what we were here for, the story that's intending to be told in this volume. You can't be mad at that. They do tell you everything you need to know to understand what's going on. There isn't this huge catalog of arcana that they haven't revealed to you yet that they're going to keep hinting at. They do hint at things, obviously, but it's to get you interested in them telling the origin story that you know is forthcoming within a reasonable amount of time. It's not this stuff where it's super cryptic and you're like, what is that even supposed to mean? You know what it means. You know that it's going somewhere. So I appreciate that about it.
Yeah. Of all this image stuff we've been reading, I'm not going to say it's not lowbrow. It's just, I don't know. It's palatable, yet at the same time, kind of not palatable. It's super, super, it's like unnecessarily dark and in your face, but still, I mean, it's fine. It's not as nearly as bad as I was thinking this stuff was going to be, because you really don't hear about Shadowhawk nearly as much. And look, I'm going to be real with you here. I kind of like the costume.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't look like Wolverine just because he has some freaking pokey things on his head. He's like Wolverine. He doesn't look like Batman either. Mm-hmm. He looks like Shadowhawk. Okay, there's some borrowed elements here or there, but I think it's fine. I think it's fine. The helmet doesn't make any sense, but I like it. It's different, growing on me.
Yeah. One of the nice things about the cover enhancements is it'd be very easy to read the costume as just being white. And because they're constantly doing foil and silver enhancements, you know in your brain when you see him on the page that it's silver. They don't have the coloring there yet to really convey silver easily, but the enhancements remind you of that. And there aren't a lot of guys with all that silver on them. Sometimes it's a little weird because is he wearing a black costume? Is he wearing a purple costume? I kind of like it when it's purple, even though that doesn't necessarily make sense for that type of character, but it kind of gives it a little bit more of a pizzazz, a little pop. It's not consistent, and given that it's supposed to be a grounded, realistic character, having colors change and the design of the helmet change, why can't you get that down? But I don't know, from page to page, I kind of like when they give you a little something different. You're like, oh, that looks kind of neat. That looks a little different. I don't mind that. It's enjoyable enough. You know, it definitely could have been a lot worse. So yeah, no complaints.
It's enjoyable enough. It could have been a lot worse. I think that is a great descriptor of it.
It's a B movie. It's a solid B movie. It's not, they obviously didn't spend $150 million on this one. This is like a little $15, $20 million jobber. It gets the job done. It's fun at times. You don't always have to be tasked with some epic storytelling. It's like, look, this is just a ground level urban vigilante story. It's a very effective protagonist. There's no hanging out in the alleyway whining. It's like, no, he's breaking some backs over here. He's been very good at it. I really think you'd run out of people at the rate that he's going through these backs, though. You know, I don't think there's enough people in New York for him to go through that many backs.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's got to be some fucking handicap ramp initiative. Like, this dude has got to, I mean, they got to make real changes to the infrastructure of this city if he's been breaking people's backs for 2 years. Like, every day, he's added like 600-700 broken backs to the population of the city. Like, that's outrageous.
I don't think it's Captain Frakes that's paying for the bounty hunters. I think it's Medicaid.
The financial drain to repair all of these poor criminals is outrageous.
The other thing is, any like JP Slaughter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it that I keep hearing like JP Slaughter, Slaugher? No, like he's going to be giving out interest loans as well, high interest loans, as opposed to being a bounty hunter.
Or he's like, I'm JP Slaughter. Have you been injured by a truck driver?
He's got the stash for it, for sure.
Do you have mesothelioma? You may be entitled to a cash settlement. Call me JP Slaughter now.
My interest rates are murder.
We murder the competition. Lord.
On Facebook, we were liked by Michael Wagner, and, you know, our bread and butter is on Twitter. I got some spawn loving from the 20th Century Geek podcast, 1-8 Sage, Adriano, Andrea Rica, Dr. Ange, Baby Skeletor, Biko Django, CH, Chris Dunford, Chris Leiden, Cloud T, Colin is Writing, Comic Book Couples Counseling, Dr. Pop Culture BGSU, Ed Moore, Edward Hui, Eric Willand, Fanholes Podcast, Green Lantern HG Fighting the Good Fight, The Hammer Strikes Random Geeky Stuff, Hayden of Zur in R, History of Comics on Film, Hulkling hashtag Black Lives Matter, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Jason Schmidt, Jason Snicked Venable, Jeffrey Brown, Jock Tastico, Keith G. Baker, Christados, Lord Mac, Luke H. Brown, Monil is Cool, Mike Wagner again, Mike at Send Aliens to Me, Miracle Man at Komodo 1977, Nuka Carl Quantum, Odell Abner Dracula, Otha Zachariah Edward Loesch, Randy Caldwell, Richard Field, Sal Buscema Punch Enthusiast, which I would assume you are too, Ms. Fixit, Schlachtopus Inc., Sean Merrick, Siskoid, Sue Kent Ant, Talk Nerdy to me, Tim Price, the Pod Crasher, Tuck, X51, Aaron Stack Comic, and Zendal 42. Do Terrifically Better texted, "You rang." I think that's a reference to not knowing why we linked him into our promotion on Twitter. That happens sometimes. If you like or retweet something related to Spawnometer, you get on the list at least for the 1 month. If you don't retweet us the next time, then you go off the list. Richard G wrote, "Thanks for the ad. Great image selected too. Have to retweet when great images are added to the post I'm included in. Love this stuff." The Reverend Odell Abner Dracula wrote, "New Spawnometer is out, which means one thing. I have to go cut the grass or rake the flower beds or otherwise extract myself from the noisy household under the pretense of chores so I can covertly enjoy the new episode." Keith Drake wrote, "Trencher, given greatness." Michael Wagner wrote, "Fantastic episode. This was some, there were some great interview segments." Jeffrey Brown wrote, "I am surprised the curse didn't show up on the HBO Spawn animated series. Like, who would have voiced him? Thinking face. I like his action figure from Wave 2 and never bought it, but the inking by Kevin Conrad is very McFarlane looking, especially when he's over Tony Daniels' pencils. Keith Gibbons' art to me has always been a curiosity. I think the first thing I was truly aware of creating by him was Lobo. As a kid, I first saw him in a few episodes of Superman the Animated Series. It was only later I got interested in reading the Simon Bisley comic. I will say I really like Giffen's art during the late 80s. Whenever I got to read it in random back issues of Dr. Fate, once again, I got into it because of the Superman the Animated Series. And yeah, I thought Dr. Fate on that show was quite cool. Random issues of Daredevil and Ambush Bug plus Legion of Superheroes. I like the way he drew faces. Now, Mr. Monster is a comic I still haven't read, but sounds interesting. But back to Simon Bisley, I saw his art on the covers of Morrison's Doom Patrol run. Fucking love it. Got excited when I saw it the first time. I still haven't read the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles miniseries Body Count with Kevin Eastman. You read Body Count, didn't you? I remember selling that to you. Yeah.
I couldn't tell you. I mean, that was when I was going through my English writer phase. So I was going a lot of writers and artists from England. Honestly, I couldn't tell you. I remember buying it. I remember reading it. It must not have been very good for it not to leave some kind of impression on my mind. I can't think about it. I've read some Mr. Monster. It's a little interesting. I've read The Bad Boy that Simon Bisley did with
Frank Miller.
Is it Frank Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Bad Boy?
Yeah, I remember. It was a magazine format. I might actually still have a copy, maybe, in one of my magazine boxes.
Version of, what was that movie, that John Ritter movie?
Problem Child.
Problem Child, yeah.
Yeah, but like extreme uncensored Problem Child, I guess.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I don't vaguely remember. I remember reading Body Count, but I was also at the time reading like Jaguar God and.
Right, right. Made more Dealer. Funny you should mention that. I wanted to actually properly celebrate Halloween this year to some degree, since obviously we're not having parties or trick or treating, but it just really pissed me off that Halloween was on a Saturday and there wasn't fuck all I could do about that. Yeah. Is that you, same as you?
Yeah, no, I went out just to drive around town and there was like no trick or treaters anywhere. I mean, there were in some areas, but where I went, yeah, there was nothing going on. It was kind of sad.
Yeah, we didn't get any either. Yeah. So to help me with that, for most of that weekend, I instead of working on podcasts like I probably should have been, I was watching Halloween movies and I decided to go ahead and brave Glenn Danzig's Veronica. And oh my God, it's the most incompetent movie I've ever seen. It's getting flashbacks now to that trash.
So Halloween night for me was revisiting some old animated movies. So I watched Heavy Metal.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Fire and Ice.
Mm-hmm, nice.
Wizard. I watched Transformers 86. What else did I watch? I fell asleep to one last one. Shit, what was I watching? Oh, Street Fight.
Which one was Street Fight?
Street Fight. The infamous.
Bakshi. Yeah, with all the racism.
Yes. Yeah, I fell asleep. I forgot I owned it. So I was watching. I was just like, oh shit, I hadn't seen this before. But I fell asleep halfway. By then it was already like 2:30 in the morning. I was really tired and I was all animated out anyway.
Yeah, I stayed up to like 4 watching that Veronica. I thought I was just going to watch segment and move on, but I realized if I stopped, I was never going to come back to it. And I was just entranced by how awful it was. And I wanted to see if it could possibly get worse. And then it did, because the best segment is the first and each segment afterwards just gets more and more meaningless. So yeah, I should have just passed out to it like you did to Street Fight.
Really? While I was watching that film festival of my own, I had the urge to put on some blue jeans, a blue jean jacket, a black t-shirt, and just lay on the couch. But yeah, that didn't happen. I was definitely transported back to the 80s. I don't know. I have no idea how that started too. I literally like picked up a pizza, eating some pizza. I was like, let me watch a movie. And somehow I just started watching fucking Fire and Ice. And it just, I think Fryho owns it on something. And I watched his version. And then fucking 2:30 in the morning, they're just fucking plowing through fucking movies, like either digitally or physical copies of them. So yeah, it was fun Halloween still for the most part.
And I hadn't thought about it until I was reading the comment, but who would you have, would you have had voice the curse on the Spawn animated show?
The curse?
Yeah, that's a good question. I missed that when
Roddy
I was...
Roddy McDowell.
Roddy McDowell? Okay. I was thinking Brad Dourif.
Roddy McDowell. He's a fucking fanatic. Just comes off as...
Oh, no, don't get me... I'm always out here for Roddy McDowell, and I think he would have still been alive back then. So yeah, so I'm glad we both had somebody off the top of our heads without really having to think about it too much. And so finally, Biko Django wrote, "Awesome app. Let me just say, today, this podcast was the best type type of distraction. You guys waxing lyrical about the content you so clearly enjoy and love was the perfect means to muffle out social media noise. So many interesting Spawn comic book deets and facts. Real cool. Gave us 100 points.
Oh,
so,
wow. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm glad you dug it.
Cool.
And that's a mail.
Yep.
Oh, hello there. Do you enjoy going to the movies, attending comic conventions and theme parks, or rocking out to your favorite band at a karate concert? Lucky for you, in the midst of chaos, heroes emerge in the form of the
Social Distance Warriors!
So bunker down, relax, and get ready to dive into the world of music.
6 feet apart, please.
Movies and television.
6 feet apart, please.
Comics.
6 feet apart, please.
And all other forms of entertainment on the Social Distance Warrior podcast on the Rhino Network on socialdistancewarrior.com.
Hi, I'm one of the high priests of Khonshu Rei, and I have the sacred privilege of providing you, the Loony Listener, with a podcast honouring Marvel's very own Moon Knight. Want to learn more about the Fist of Khonshu in comics? You got it. We review all current and classic runs from Mensch to Houston to Lemire. Want to know where else to find the Avatar of Vengeance? Glad you asked. We also review action figures, video games, animation, TV, anything and anywhere Moon Knight is featured, we've got it covered. All this, along with any latest news which may feature our White Knight, week in or week out. So join me and a host of others at Into the Night, a Moon Knight podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or support the show by becoming a Patreon member. Into the Night, a Moon Knight podcast. It's time to get your Khonshu on.
And action! It's Fade Out. Hosted by film fanatic Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests, Fade Out will examine the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
This is a fan-produced, not-for-profit podcast. No copyright infringement is intended, and any use of copyrighted materials will need to be covered under fair use. If you don't agree, you can go straight to hell!